Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Broadcasting from the WEEI studios. Powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station. This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
We were just feeling good, no less than, I don't know, 5-10 minutes ago here on this Sunday. We were just feeling good. It doesn't matter. We'll get to that in just a moment. Good morning and welcome into WEEI. It is just after 10 o'clock here on June the 1st, 2025. Thanks for being here this morning on WEEI 93.7 FM. Thanks for joining us. If you're on one of our affiliates, good morning to you as well. Out in the Cape, Providence, Rhode Island, Springfield, Worcester, Portland, Maine, Keene, New Hampshire, Claremont, New Hampshire, and White River Junction, Vermont. If you're not joining us on any one of those, you're probably listening on the Odyssey app. And if you haven't downloaded that yet, make sure you do. You can get podcasts, live shows like the one you're listening to right now, some of the great original content on WEEI.com, and so much more. Join the conversation at any point this morning via call and via text at 617-779-7937. That's how you get involved in the conversation. I'm taking you up until Red Sox baseball pregame coverage with me, of all people, at 1235 this morning before the rubber game. What else is new between the Sox and the Atlanta Braves down in Atlanta? Final game of the season series between these two groups and the final game of the road trip for the Red Sox as well. It is a crochet day, which is good. It is also a day where the Red Sox recorded exactly 5 singles, got 2 runners in scoring position, and set a historic number in terms of not walking while also striking out. I think it was 14 times for the first time in franchise history. So all of that leading up into Red Sox baseball. Later on in the program, we'll of course discuss Stephon Diggs. No, I do not have a WAP parody that I am going to play for you in the 11 o'clock hour, but we'll get to that, and we'll also get to the latest on the Boston Bruins. Where on God's green earth is the head coach of the Boston Bruins? That is going to be a question that we're going to talk about later on in the program. Originally, off the top of the show today, I was going to discuss the dynamic between Alex Cora and Craig Breslow, because both individual parties seem to speak a lot this week. You had Craig Breslow on the Greg Hill Show. You had Alex Cora on WEEI Afternoons. Then you had Breslow speaking to a group of writers earlier this weekend during the course of the Atlanta series. And of course, Cora does his pregame availability and his postgame availability. So both have been talking individually, and both have been addressing each other in certain terms. And I wanted to dive into the discussion of where is the relationship between these two parties. But something came across the collective desk of the WEEI staff in this building, and that's two people, myself and my good friend Brian Frazoco. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Dan, how's it going?
It's going great. It's going great. And you were boots on the ground, just like I was, for WEEI Afternoon's weekly conversation with Alex Cora, manager of the Boston Red Sox, where it was a wide-ranging discussion of the many different things facing the Boston Red Sox right now, including the pitching and the deployment of Garrett Crochet. And that came up. One of the discussions that came up was, hey, man, you looked us dead in the eye and said you're excited for Garrett Crochet to go 6 to 7 innings. And then Fitzy asked the question, oh, well, I made a joke about a complete game. And you said, yeah, wouldn't that be nice? And we had this great moment and we laughed and we cried and we held hands. And then you pulled him after 85 pitches. What the hell, man? And Alex Cora said, well, listen, that's an organizational decision. That is something that was predetermined. I'm not going to go on the radio and give the game plan away. And that's all fine and good. So we got that answer. There was something else that he declared when he was on this past week on WEEI Afternoons, Brian. It was about Christian Campbell. So if you can, run that answer.
Yeah, there's a good chance he's going to play Sunday at first base. He looks, you know, in practice, obviously, he looks more comfortable going to his right, to his right, left. We've been talking about decision making, and as you guys know, it's not that easy, right? You saw it yesterday. You know, Sogi has played first base most of the season. There was a ground ball to his right that he went far, right? And it was a routine ground ball to second baseman. He tried to make the play. Obviously, Slayton didn't cover. He was late, and they got men first and third. So we understand what we're trying to accomplish here, and we know that there's going to be some mistakes, but we're going to take our chances, you know, and he feels better at it, and there's a good chance he's going to be Sunday.
So notice the operative word in that answer that was given at the beginning and at the end. There's a good chance. It was perceived when it was aggregated online as Christian Campbell is going to play first base on Sunday.
Liar.
In listening back, unfortunately, that's exactly what that was. And there was just the ever so slightest out clause in that answer, with Cora saying there's a good chance. Alex Cora has submitted the lineup for Sunday between the Red Sox and the Braves, and here it is. It's Jaron Duran in left, Rafael Devers. Can you imagine if I said he was your first baseman? He's not. He's DHing. Willier Abreu out and right. Hitting cleanup, Abraham Toro. What position is he playing, Dan? Great question. He's playing first base.
Do they just pick out of a hat of who plays cleanup on any given day? I mean, it feels like every guy in the lineup said cleanup at some point.
Casas, Story, Abreu, Campbell, Meyer.
Meyer played the other day, right?
Toro. I don't think I'm missing anybody yet. that's we're at six, at least six, and I might have missed one, and I apologize if I did. And it gets worse as I go. And then, you know, Meyer at third, Story at short, Christian Campbell batting seventh at second base.
Liar.
So I'm not here to criticize the decision. All I am here to do is say, why did you answer that way, Alex?
Yeah, there's a good chance he's going to play Sunday.
Good chance. Good chance. Don't put a date on it, Alex, my man.
That's what's crazy. He could have easily just said, yeah, at some point he's going to play
first. We're
working
towards it.
Right. You know, we would like for him to play first. We don't really have any other options. Casas is obviously down. You know, in theory, we'd like Campbell to play first, but there's no timetable on it. Instead, you put an arbitrary date on it, and not just any date. Like, what was he on with us? Wednesday, Thursday this week, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Thursday. You tell us that he's going to play 3 days from then?
Right. Right, exactly.
Crazy.
After, and I think the week or two prior, he said, like, out of a 10, he's like a 2 or 3 playing first base at this point. So that's what I'm poking holes in. If you have decided at some point that, hey, maybe this first base experiment isn't going according to plan, and maybe you want to allow him to settle in it at second base, then fine. That's all fine. I think one of the biggest issues that's facing Christian Campbell right now, and I was running the numbers for the pregame show, running the numbers. I just looked back and clicked on a web page.
Sounds better when you say running the numbers.
Yeah, exactly. It makes it sound like I'm actually doing work for this job. He was hitting .301 on the final day of April when the Red Sox were 17-15. They had just got walked off by Toronto, and now he's in the 220s. He's had a sub two, well under 200 batting average in the month of May, as you have worked him into center field and worked him out at first base and then put him back to second base and hit him cleanup, then hit him fifth, then hit him sixth, then hit him seventh, then hit him eighth. And now he's back up to seventh. Ho-hum. Congratulations. So getting back to the point about the answer at hand, to Brian's point that he made a moment ago, I just don't understand why you put a timeline on it. I understand things change. I understand that you can change your mind. You wake up, Abraham Toro has had a great couple of days, and so maybe you want to try to ride the hot hand. I fully understand that maybe when that answer was given on Thursday, you didn't expect Abraham Toro to have the kind of series that he has had against the Atlanta Braves. But are we taking ourselves seriously in 2025 as the Boston Red Sox, or are we not? And that's the question that I want to know. Because what you just did between Thursday and today is something that an unserious and non-competitive baseball team is doing.
There's a good chance it's going to be Sunday.
Why? So let me get this straight. Your plan, the same organizational plan that made you pull Garrett Crochet after 85 pitches and further tax your bullpen when you needed him to eat pitches and eat innings in that game against the Mets, that same organizational plan theoretically was being deployed where that you were going to get him a game in the final game of the road trip on Sunday against Atlanta. All these conversations that Craig Breslow says that he has with you and the coaching staff as you try to figure out how to win baseball games. This plan, these conversations, all this stuff that makes you look like you know what you're doing and you're on the same page, dictated that Campbell was going to be at second. And then no, this is going to sound disrespectful. I'm going to preface it by saying no disrespect, and then I'm going to disrespect the player. So just bear with me. A journeyman, third string first baseman in Abraham Toro has a hot 2 days, and all of a sudden we're going to abandon our plan. Why? So are you serious about Christian Campbell playing first base? Or are you just throwing you-know-what at the wall and seeing what sticks? Are you putting Christian Campbell through hell right now as he tries to just get his footing in Major League Baseball? Are you actually trying to develop this guy, and do you have a plan for his development, or are you just trying to figure this out on the fly?
Feels like the latter.
Brian, this is something that I've started to develop in the last couple weeks, because there is this consistent theme with this, let's say the post-2021 Red Sox, because you're going to turn around and go, well, look at Rafael Devers. That's also not a great example, but we've talked so much about Red Sox prospects in this now, you know, penny-pinching mindset of we're trying to be mindful of the salary cap and the luxury tax, and we're not trying to spend with the big dogs anymore, and we're trying to be a bit more economical and find the bargain bin players that are still going to get you the same value. And, you know, it's the more expensive version of Moneyball, and it's kind of a weird balance between what Dombrowski was doing and Chaim Bloom was doing and all this organizational philosophy that has caused us to add extra focus to the players that do not play for the Red Sox, all your prospects. Then they get to the majors, and what happens? I mean, look up and down this lineup. Duran is an exception to the rule. But even still, I mean, it took him a couple cracks before he got there. Right now, Christian Campbell had a hot month, and you've now thrown him for a loop. You clearly have no plan right now for what you actually want from Christian Campbell. You put him in these high-leverage situations, he fails, and then you pull him out after a week. But you won't send him down to develop. You're going to keep him on the big club, but now you're going to move him around to four different positions. So that's one. Marcelo Meyer, still too early to tell. Seydon Rafaela, you had no plan with Seydon Rafaela last year. Playing a rookie in center field and shortstop is a crazy thing to ask of a first-year player. And then look at the pitching. Look at Tanner Houck. Shell of himself. 9 ERA. Phantom IL. I don't want to hear that he actually has a real... That's not a real injury. We're dealing with shoulder, arm stuff, and all of a sudden now he's ready for a rehab assignment in a week. You just needed to get him off the mound for 2 weeks. Brian Baio cannot physically get through five innings again. And the makeup between the ears is a mess. There is no plan for developing these guys at the major league level. It's the opposite of a plan. It's just, well, maybe we'll fall ass backwards into the right mix. Maybe hitting Christian Campbell sixth and playing him at first base is going to be the thing that unlocks it. But then it doesn't go well for 2 days. So let's throw him in center and hit him fourth. Oh, that didn't work either. Then let's put him at second and hit him eighth. It bothers me to no end that you've put so much emphasis on these cost-controlled guys. You're holding Roman Anthony back in AAA just for the fact that you want to make sure that these guys are on cost-controlled deals before they hit arbitration, before you actually have to pay them real dollars. And then you get them to the major leagues, and you have no idea what to do with them. And because you also haven't invested in veteran players on your roster, you're also putting them in situations where they have to succeed. But you have no idea where to put them or when to put them there to make them successful. Oh, my God. So Abraham Toro playing first base today. Christian Campbell not. And that is how we are starting this Sunday morning here on WEEI. I will allow my face to return from red to its normal color, and we will get to your calls at 617-779-7937. I want to hear if you're as frustrated as I am, because this is part Cora, part Breslow. This is part pitching lab, part John Henry. Everybody gets a slice of the blame pie. So are you as frustrated as I am with the way that this team and these players are being handled right now and the seeming lack of plan that exists with the Red Sox? 617-779-7937. We'll get to your calls and continue the Red Sox conversation after Brian Frazoco gets you caught up on what's trending. This plan.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Yep, here's what's trending now on WEEI and on WEEI.com. As we just talked about, the Red Sox dropped Game 2 of their weekend series in Atlanta to the Braves yesterday. They got blanked by a score of 5-0. The rubber match game of the series is today with first pitch at 1:35. Garrett Crochet will be on the bump for the Red Sox. Bryce Elder will be pitching for the Braves. We'll have the call of that game for you right here on the Shaw's and Star Market, WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks will be on the call, and Dan Ball will stick around for the MassMutual pregame show at 12:35. The lineups are out for the Red Sox, and they are as follows. Jaron Duran batting leadoff. He's in left field. You got Rafael Devers DHing, batting second. Willy Abreu in right, followed by Abraham Toro batting cleanup. He's at first base. Yes, that's right. Abraham Toro at first base, not Christian Campbell. Marcelo Meyer, he'll be at third base, followed by Trevor Story, who is at short. He'll be batting sixth. Christian Campbell at second base. He is batting seventh. Connor Wong will do the catching for you. He's batting eighth. And Sadan Rafaela wraps it up, batting ninth in center field. The Pacers advance to the NBA Finals with a 125-108 win over the Knicks in Game 6 last night. It's the Pacers' first Finals appearance since the year 2000. They will take on the Oklahoma City Thunder, with Game 1 set for Thursday night at 8:30. The Stanley Cup Finals are set with a rematch of last year's championship as the Panthers take on the Oilers. Game 1 of that series is Wednesday, with puck drop at 8 o'clock. The New England Revolution got a win yesterday over Montreal by a score of 3-0. Revs are now off. Until June 14th, they'll take on Cincinnati. I'm Brian Frazoco. That's what's trending now on WEEI and on WEEI.com. More Dan Ball and Red Sox bitching coming up after this.
WEEI, WEEI, New England Sports Original.
Attention sports enthusiasts. Keep the adrenaline pumping and elevate your game day with Chumba Casino. It's completely free to play. No purchase necessary. Whether you're cheering from the stands, on the move, or relaxing at home, Chumba Casino brings the thrill of social casino directly to your fingertips. Experience the ultimate social casino adventure with reels of casino-style games offering hundreds of exciting options to choose from and fresh new releases every week. There's always something new and thrilling to explore. From action-packed social slots and classic blackjack to engaging bingo and solitaire, the fun never stops. Plus, enjoy generous daily login bonuses and a fantastic free welcome bonus to kickstart your social gaming journey. Dive into the excitement. Discover a world where you can play for your chance to redeem some serious prizes and have a blast along the way. Don't miss out. What are you waiting for? Join now and immerse yourself in nonstop fun and adventure with Chumba Casino. Get in on the action today at ChumbaCasino.com and make make every day a Chumba day. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus TNC supply.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Christian Campbell will maybe see some playing time at first base.
Yeah, there's a good chance he's going to play Sunday.
Brian, what's the new description of Dan Ball on Sunday mornings? Red Sox bitching is what we're going with, at least for the first hour.
I like it.
The bitching hour.
So it used to be the bitching hour at 5 o'clock with Arcand and Hart?
That's right.
So we're just bumping it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. We're giving you, on your Sunday, your day of rest is when we're giving you the bitching hour. 617-779-7937. The Red Sox are still playing Christian Campbell at second base. Another in a long line of reasons for us to tear out our collective hair. Let's go to the phones. Richard in Hyannis leads us off on the Red Sox. Good morning, Richard.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to know why the front office is controlling the pitches instead of Alex Cora.
All right, that's a fair question, Richard. Thank you very much for the call.
And we'll stay on topic.
That's right. No, it's a good question. I'm going to couch Richard's question for about 5 minutes because I want to get into that as well, because Walker Buehler had a very interesting answer as it pertains to the way that he was deployed in yesterday's game. And it raised my eyebrows because one of the things that I was most excited about coming into the season was, oh, let's get Walker Buehler into the Andrew Bailey pitching system, the pitching lab, if you will, a guy who has lost considerable life off of his fastball and is going to be using his secondary stuff more. At least that's how it was perceived. That's how I perceived it coming into the season. And so we'll get to that in just a moment. But let's get to Rick in Salem. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Brother, are you there?
Yes, sir. What's up?
Brother, sorry, brother. I had the phone on pause. Listen, the Red Sox made some huge mistakes. You can go back to, well, how could you not re-sign Nathan Eovaldi, but you're going to sign Walker Buehler? Okay, I go to Chris Sale, Michael Walker, the offseason. Listen, there was many high-leverage relievers available, and they did nothing. But they want to rely on Garrett Whitlock. Then I can go to Jaron Duran. He's a disappointment at the leadoff hitter. You can't keep having 0-for-5s out of this guy. 3 out of 4 games, he was 0-for-5s as your leadoff hitter. I could go on and on. This team's a train wreck. They got all young players, not all young players, but the young players they have, it's going to take time. I blame Breslow and them, the offseason. Cora, I'm not a Cora guy anyways. But listen, I'm just so frustrated with, how do you let Chris Sale go? Ready? Chris Sale was, when his last season in Boston, he was pitching well towards the end. And Eovaldi especially. Eovaldi's 10 times better than Walker Buehler. Not even a question. This front office has no clue to what they're doing, brother. I'll let you go on that note.
Thank you, Rick. Much appreciated, brother. Always great to get that energy from Rick. A couple different things.
Do you have any issue with them getting rid of Sale when they did?
No, I don't.
Neither do I.
I think in hindsight, there are obviously, I mean, he was a Cy Young winner last year, but I think that ship had sailed. I think the blowback to keeping Chris Sale would have been pretty significant at the time. Obviously, hindsight is 20/20, and Vaughn Grissom is not panned out into anything. And I think that the biggest hole that you can poke in the Chris Sale trade is not the fact that you made it, but it's the fact that you acquired a player that just joins a logjam of what you already have in your organization. If you knew that you had Marcelo Meyer who was waiting in the wings, and you had Christian Campbell that was waiting in the wings, and then if you go further down the depth chart, Mikey Romero, other middle infielders that are kind of behind him, why add another middle infielder to the mix? So what was your plan there? And that all ties together to what my biggest complaint is with this group right now. I don't understand what their plan is. I'm not sure if they have a plan for how they want to build this roster. And so we've played the blame game ad nauseum on this station of, how did this situation get to this point to where we have an ownership that didn't spend and then kind of spent this offseason, but only really spent in two. Dan Ball. That is me. Thanks for joining us here on WEEI. Brian Frazoco behind the glass.
Wrong button there.
Anyways, so you have an ownership that's spent in some ways this offseason. You have a front office that was not your first choice in Craig Breslow. He was far down the list of choices for guys to run your baseball ops. And then you have a manager who is one of the highest paid in the game, one of the most well-respected in the game, but was not a guy that was hired by Breslow. In fact, he was hired by a guy that had a complete opposite view on how to build a roster in Dave Dombrowski. Dombrowski was, I'm going to trade what it takes and I'm going to spend what it takes to get a World Series, and eventually you're going to let me go and I'm going to leave your prospect cupboards bare, and for some reason I'm also going to ruin your bullpen, because apparently those were the two things that happened in Detroit that also then happened in Boston. You brought in Chaim Bloom and you retained and brought back Alex Cora after his 1 year suspension during the COVID year. Bloom was responsible for rebuilding your prospect cupboards. He did that. I don't think that he was capable or willing to be a big spender, and I'm not sure that he was going to be allowed to, even if he did have the need and desire. The times that they spent, Masataki Yoshida and Trevor Story, big ol' flops. So you have that. Then you get to Breslow, who is kind of supposed to be the bridge somewhere in the middle of the two different ends of the spectrum that you had previously. He was supposed to have the analytical, prospect-driven motives of Bloom while also potentially having more of an ability to spend, and that was sort of kind of on display this offseason. So the plan is the kind of the main idea of what's gotten me so hot and bothered here on this beautiful, blustery Sunday morning here in the greater Boston area. I still believe that the entire crux of the issue goes all the way to the top with ownership, because you've given mixed messages at every step for how you want this team to be built. You've brought in Craig Breslow and you've allowed Craig Breslow to bring in his best friend, Andrew Bailey. And now Breslow and Bailey have this analytical driven pitching lab that they're deploying for their pitchers. And it kind of feels as though you don't really factor Alex Cora's baseball IQ into how this works. I would like to believe that if Alex Cora had the final say on baseball decisions, we wouldn't have had the Garrett Crochet 85 pitches debacle that happened last week. Maybe I'm wrong, but that reeked of Breslow and Bailey decided that this day, or Breslow and Bailey's computers spit out this day as the day that Garrett Crochet was going to throw 85 pitches. regardless of game situation, regardless of the fact that you desperately needed him to go longer. The computer said that today was the day that you geared it back. And then, you know, the next time around, he went out, he threw 100 and whatever pitches against Milwaukee, and he was great.
Do you think Cora knew going into our interview last Wednesday that there was a limit to Crochet's pitch count, and that was sort of his way of, I don't want to say quietly protesting, but just sort of throwing front office under the bus? Like, yeah, you know, I wanted him to go deeper into this game, but they already decided. I feel like he's done that a lot. We talked about the Kyle Barraclough situation last week, and I just feel like there's been a lot of him, I don't want to necessarily say protesting, but trying to show up ownership and caring more about him being right or his point of view as opposed to actually winning the game.
First of all, yes, I think he knew well in advance, and he just wasn't going to tell us. He wasn't going to tell Crochet. He wasn't going to tell anybody. He was just going to do it because he was told to do it, and he didn't want. I respect in a sense the fact that he knew, but he also knew that if you tell the pitcher beforehand, that's going to negatively impact how Crochet goes about his start. He's not going to treat it as a normal start if he knows, hey, I'm only at 85, so I got to be more aggressive. I got to try to limit pitch count. I can't really try to locate as much as I just need to overpower these guys. So I appreciate him in that sense, honestly, being the buffer between the analytical approach and what actually takes place on the field. And to your point about the protest, I don't think it's as much against ownership. I think John Henry and Alex Cora are in fine footing to the fact, and I think the $21 million, no, but, and I know what you're going to say. The $21 million contract kind of shows that these guys seem to see eye to eye. It's all against Breslow.
Right.
And I think that's the biggest issue befalling the 2025 Red Sox. And that goes to the treatment of prospects, the fact that prospects are kind of bizarrely either added to the roster and played or not and deployed in bad situations. And it also goes back to the Devers conversation. I think all of this can be tracked back to there's a split between what Craig Breslow wants and what Alex Cora wants. And I think there's probably a little bit of an imbalanced power dynamic there. Because Breslow is supposed to be your chief baseball officer, the king, the president, the grand poobah of baseball. He's supposed to be. But Alex Cora is the, I don't know, Brian, face of the franchise.
I mean, isn't that why they kind of re-signed him? They felt the fan pressure. They sort of did the same thing when they signed Rafael Devers. I don't know how much they really wanted to sign him, but they couldn't not sign Devers, Bogarts, and Betts, right? They had to sign one of them.
Yeah.
So they sort of, by fan pressure, ended up signing Devers. I feel like it was similar with Alex Cora.
I agree.
I feel like if they fired him, they would have gotten a lot of blowback from the fans because, to some extent, he is sort of the face of the franchise, right? Like, I don't necessarily know if Devers is sort of that guy. We talk about it in football a lot, right? When they do those promos and it's like the player versus player.
Yeah.
And with the Patriots a few years ago, they would just throw Belichick up because they didn't have any good players.
Right.
I feel like that's sort of what they've been doing at the Red Sox. And I think so many fans have defended Cora over the last few years. I feel like this is really the first year where, I don't even necessarily want to say the majority of the fans, but more fans have started to turn on him because they have a more talented team. I don't think there was a lot of blame going on Cora over the last three seasons when they missed the playoffs because of the lack of talent.
Right.
I feel like that's why they re-signed him, because they were like, we've already pissed off these fans so much by trading Betts, by moving on from Bogarts, by proving we're not a serious operation. We have to throw them a bone in some way. Otherwise, they're not going to show up to the games.
And it's my personal opinion, because I agree with everything you said. It's my personal opinion that John Henry told Craig Breslow to get on a plane, go to Colorado, and make that decision, because he was the one who recognized that pressure. This is not informed. This is not anything that I've been told or heard. This is my own personal opinion. If Craig Breslow was unequivocally in charge of the team and their baseball operations, I don't think Alex Cora would be the manager. I think Andrew Bailey would be the manager, because that is a guy that goes out and executes what Craig Breslow wants in terms of his analytical approach to how he wants this baseball team to operate. So that's where I see this split, this seeming lack of communication coming from. And Brian, if you could for me grab the Greg Hill clip from earlier this week. So Craig Breslow was on the Greg Hill show. He did his front office report, and he was asked, by the way, they did a tremendous job, and they went deeper on the Roman Anthony conversation. Why the hell isn't he here? Which is a very valid question, and one that I think fans are still asking themselves. By the way, the fact that the announcement came out after yesterday's game, and we'll get to this, that you were calling up Worcester outfielder Nate Eaton.
Felt like they were trolling us.
It did feel like they were trolling us. Like, we haven't been through enough that you're going to call up a Worcester outfielder and make all these roster moves, and Roman Anthony's still just going to sit there? And then they put out the lineup, and there he is, leading off, center field, left field, Roman Anthony, look at all this. Oh, my God. And they wonder why people are so pissed about this group. Anyways, the Greg Hill Show, they asked about Alex Cora and his role and just the general feel from Breslow towards Cora. This was the answer.
So I would say that's not exclusively the role. I think that was, you know, probably distilled down too simply. I think it's to synthesize in real time the information that he's seeing along with the objective information and all of the preparation. And I also think, you know, one of, if not the most difficult job that a manager has, and you know, Alex could certainly speak to this better than I can, is managing the personalities and the needs of 26 guys in a clubhouse and a staff of 10 to 15 coaches. You know, but this isn't about telling Alex to, you know, stick to a script without deviating at all. This is about having productive conversations to put the team in the best position to win as often as we possibly can.
How many times do I have to hear the phrase, we're having conversations, productive conversations about how to best put the baseball team in the blah, 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 blah. So that was Chris Curtis who asked that question. And he asked specifically about, thank you. He asked specifically about, is Alex Cora's job just to follow the script that you put out for him, just to follow what the computer spits out for every single game? And his answer was no. With a question mark at the end? No, with kind of the voice going up at the end, because he said it's an oversimplification of what it is. So that's part of it, is that he's there to execute what the analytics say. But then he also basically, how I perceive that is he has to follow what the game plan is, and then he's there to clean up the mess if it goes wrong. That's how I perceive that answer. And then that gets us to an answer that was written in print when Breslow was also asked about Cora. Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of confidence in Alex's ability to lead this group, and that doesn't mean that we don't have conversations every day about what we might be missing or what more we can do, but we obviously made a commitment to Alex. Put a pin in that one. We're going to see that through, and right now it's about making sure that we're doing everything we can to enable the 26 guys on our roster to help us win as many games as possible. All of that is bluster to me, except for one part. We obviously made a commitment to Alex. We're going to see that through.
That second line, to me, it's like, we're kind of stuck with him. So at this point, you know, we're going to have to pay him for another 3 years. So we'll ride it out and see what happens.
That doesn't mean we don't have conversations every day about what we might be missing or what more we can do. But we obviously made a commitment to Alex. We're going to see that through.
Yeah, you know, I got stuck with him for another 3 years, so, you know, I'm going to have to ride it out.
Doesn't, like, am I wrong?
Hopefully he's gone in a few years, and right. I can actually hire my guy, Andrew Bailey, but, you know, until then, stuck with Alex.
So, how am I supposed to trust in this attempt to rebuild the championship aspirations of the Boston Red Sox? How am I supposed to trust that this group knows what they're doing if they can't even agree that Alex Cora is the right manager, and Alex Cora can't even necessarily agree that Craig Breslow is the right GM, and they clearly don't see eye to eye on a number of these different things? That brings to mind one more thing on this topic. I did a little digging last night because I really wanted to try to map out where this all comes from. Why can't these sides see eye to eye? I think first and foremost, Breslow represents a side of baseball that Alex Cora, while he acknowledges, doesn't fully agree with, which is the analytical approach to running a team. And specifically, the analytical approach to the day-to-day, the play-to-play, the managerial in-game decisions. That's something that I think Cora is smart enough to understand has a role in baseball, but should not be the be-all, end-all of how you go about this. So this was a quote from September of 2023 after Chaim Bloom had been fired in the Boston Globe in response to the idea of running baseball operations for the Red Sox. Cora said, quote, "That's something that intrigues me. I've done it before on a lower scale, the WBC and winter ball, but it's something that right now, where I'm at, where we're at as a family, it's too soon to start talking about it. So it was too soon in September of 2023. But now we're a year and a half removed from that. You clearly aren't seeing eye to eye with the guy that was hired. And then think about what all came from Cora going to his daughter's graduation. How he talked about it's a job. It's not my life. This is not criticizing that he's going. This is just kind of extrapolating from that. Making a decision based on family and, you know, kind of at the opposite, like 162, put the blinders on when you're in baseball season kind of thing. Wouldn't that potentially suggest that, I don't know, maybe the day-to-day grind of being a manager is not losing its luster, but maybe there is an eye on something bigger, something greater, something that gets you out of the dugout every single day so that he can focus on his family and things that don't require you to be as hands-on as the manager. Again, this is what we as Red Sox fans collectively are trying to do, trying to put the puzzle pieces together. Why doesn't this work? Why isn't this working? Why, with all of this excitement and potential and youth and excitement with an injection of veteran leadership and guys like Alex Bregman, and that's kind of where the list ends, why isn't this working? And that's what I'm trying to find. 617-779-7937. We'll continue the Red Sox conversation on the other side here on WEEI.
Attention sports enthusiasts. Keep the adrenaline pumping and elevate your game day with Chumba Casino. It's completely free to play. No purchase necessary. Whether you're cheering from the stands, on the move, or relaxing at home, Chumba Casino brings the thrill of social casino directly to your fingertips. Experience the ultimate social casino adventure with reels of casino-style games offering hundreds of exciting options to choose from and fresh new releases every week. There's always something new and thrilling to explore. From action-packed social slots and classic blackjack to engaging bingo and solitaire, the fun never stops. Plus, enjoy generous daily login bonuses and a fantastic free welcome bonus to kickstart your social gaming journey. Dive into the excitement. Discover a world where you can play for your chance to redeem some serious prizes and have a blast along the way. Don't miss out. What are you waiting for? Join now and immerse yourself in nonstop fun and adventure with Chumba Casino. Get in on the action today at ChumbaCasino.com and make every day a Chumba day. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
0-2 to Marcelo is a high fly into left center field. Harrison, Verdugo come together. Verdugo's there to make the play, and the ball game is over. Red Sox wiped out in Atlanta 5-0. dominant start by Schwellenbach, and absolutely nothing going offensively for the Suns.
I tell you what, if you just played Will Fleming, but you pulled the words out of it and you kind of just followed the cadence of his voice, you'd know exactly what happened in that Red Sox game. There's a tone of voice that I appreciate so much as somebody who also seems to live and die on every single pitch and can get all red in the face and screamy at 10 in the morning on a Sunday just because Christian Campbell isn't playing first base. I appreciate that.
You can hear the disgust in his voice.
Yes,
sometimes.
You can. It very much, if you were going to find somebody to replace Joe Castiglione, nobody will match what he meant to this team in this city.
Seven!
But he's got the seven, and he's also got the swing and a pop-up. Will also has that kind of feeling and moderation in his voice. So 617-779-7937. Red Sox made a couple of roster moves. We'll get to that in just a moment. Catching up on a couple of the texts, you can join the conversation on the text line as well at that same number. No matter how hard WEEI tries, this team is not likable. I don't know what opening segment that person was listening to, but it certainly wasn't mine because there's very little. All right, Brian, let's go down that rabbit hole for just a moment.
Let's do it.
Who do you like right now on the Boston Red Sox? It's tough, isn't it?
I liked Meyer's catch the other day.
Do I like Meyer?
Sure. No, I like Meyer.
It's too early to not like Meyer.
And I haven't given up on Campbell. Have I been frustrated with him lately? Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. He had a really bad month, but it's June 1st today. We put May behind us.
Love
I
it.
Still have hope for Campbell that he can be a big league player and a good big league player.
Okay.
Outside of that,
Crochet.
I like Crochet.
Yeah.
I was just about to say, I like Crochet, and I've liked what I've seen from Narvaez.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's good. Yeah, and there you go.
So three-ish players? Three and a half players?
Yeah. I'm going off the top of my head. I've liked what Chapman's brought. I think that was a
pleasant surprise, right?
Absolutely, because that was a highly questionable signing when it happened, especially for being the first. Like the Red Sox got out of the gates and said, $10 million, this is our guy." But it's worked, so I have no issue with that. Should there be another high leverage arm, if not two, in the back of the bullpen? Yes. Is Chapman doing the best that he can in the situation that he has been put in? Yes, I would say so. But again, even then, like there's also a personal side that you really don't like that much. So even it, everything with this team has to come with a caveat.
If you try to look at it as a broad perspective, right? Do you like the lineup?
No.
Do you like the pitching?
Not really.
When I say pitching, starting rotation.
No.
Do you like the bullpen?
Kind of.
Do you like the manager right now?
I am a Cora supporter until I die, but he's had a bad season.
How about front office?
God, no.
Ownership?
Not really.
So it feels like...
Defense. No.
Right. Just looking at it from a broad perspective in terms of positional groups,
yeah,
there really isn't anything to like so far.
You know what I like? The Worcester Red Sox.
Okay.
Gotta love yourself the
Worcester
Sox.
There you go, yeah.
Because I don't know. That's about all the optimism I have.
They did just lose Eaton.
Oh, man, that's true. Poor Woo Sox fans waking up and going, no, our Woo Sox outfielder Nate Eaton has been recalled. Whoever shall we watch? 617-779-7937. Biggest mistake was not re-signing Schwarber, who has been great every year with the Phillies. Biggest mistake is a bit of a stretch. I think there really is something to not having his presence. Everywhere he's gone, he has been lauded for the kind of leader that he is. And it's not a Trevor Story leader where he goes up to the plate and you can see everybody in the dugout just going, oh, man. It's a leader where, like, he actually puts his money where his mouth is. Can you tell us what Breslow's experience is? Yes, I can. He was a Major League Baseball player. He was a middle reliever. Decent lefty. He had a couple good years in Boston. Hired by fellow Yale Bulldog Theo Epstein in January of 2019 as the Director of Strategic Initiatives for Baseball Operations. Then was promoted to Director of Pitching and Special Assistant to the President and General Manager. And then in November of 2020, promoted to Assistant General Manager and Vice President of Pitching. Did not know that was a thing. But then in October 25th, 2023, he was the seventh choice to be Red Sox GM. And Sam Fold said no, and everybody else said no. And so then they hired him. So theoretically speaking, he was supposed to be the guy that has been in the locker room, knows what it takes to be a baseball player, has kind of the feel for the game, the in-game decisions. He was a reliever. He's the definition of in-game decisions. Every pitch he threw was an in-game decision. And then he was supposed to brand that with, or supposed to blend that with the analytical approach because he's a smart guy. And here we are. Last one. Why do people have a problem with Cora going to his daughter's graduation? He would be a bad father if he was not there. Coaching is a job, just like your job is to talk sports on radio. I have no problem with him going. And I thought I prefaced what I said by saying that.
You made that pretty clear.
I thought so. Guess not. If you want to hear what you want to hear, then that's fine.
Selective listening.
That's
sometimes.
Yeah. I have no problem with him going. I'm extrapolating him going in the way that he's talked about managing this team is maybe he has an eye upstairs. And by the way, that's perfectly fine. Think about what management has been, or just coaching has been for Alex Cora. Bench coach in Houston, wins a World Series, gets caught in a cheating scandal, gets suspended, wins a World Series in 2018. The suspension comes back in the last post 2021. What about 2022 through 2025 of managing this team would make you go, yeah, that's the thing for me. So I wouldn't blame him if he had an eye for that. A lot of people go from the management side to moving their way upstairs, especially if he's seen it done poorly. And I think you could argue that Chaim Bloom and Craig Breslow have done the job that Cora may want to do poorly.
He's seen the blueprint of what not to do.
Exactly. And he's also worked for Dave Dombrowski, and he's seen a different version of what not to do. But he's seen that the closer you get to that, Brian, the closer you get to winning a championship. So that's where I am on that. Last thing, the Twitch chat from whenever it was active last, I think it was on Friday, is still up to my right. Christian Arcan responds to everybody in Twitch in all caps.
I've noticed that.
And I think it's perfect because he speaks for 4 hours in all caps. So he might as well carry that over to his digital approach. 617-779-7937. Okay, let us all take a breath in through your nose, out through your mouth about the Boston Red Sox. Let's get to the New England Patriots. And somehow, even they, being in May and now June, have frustrated us. What do you make of the Stephon Diggs drama, dilemma, issue, problem, or is it not one? We'll get to that next.
Dan Ball. On WEEI.
I probably put it at 15%, but again, I think that conversation with Diggs, is he going to tell Mike the truth? Because yeah. Michael, no. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, is he going to tell him?
Hey,
look, I screwed up, man. I screwed up. That's what you thought it was, and I messed up, and I shouldn't have put me in that spot, you guys in that spot, and I apologize 1,000 times over, and you won't have another problem with me. Okay, good. We can move forward. But if he's like, well, it wasn't mine, or no, that wasn't what you thought it was, or that's when you probably run into some more problems.
Lonely Island has gotten quite the rebirth on WEEI this week, and gee, I wonder why. We're back here on EEI just after 11 a.m. on June the 1st, 2025. Happy Sunday. Dan Ball with you. Got my man Brian Frazoco riding behind the glass up until 12:35. Red Sox baseball coming up at that point. Game 3, rubber game, surprise, surprise, between the Red Sox and the Atlanta Braves coming up. I'll have your pregame coverage at 12:35, first pitch at 1:35, final game of the series. And the road trip for the Red Sox before they return back home to Fenway Park. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. That was Mike Giardi of Boston Sports Journal on the WEEI afternoon program on Friday afternoon talking about the curious case of Stephon Diggs. We will get to that in just a moment. I do want to clean up the phone lines and get to the roster moves made by the Red Sox. And I feel bad because I don't have the Celtics on my docket today. It's a shorter show. So I do want to get quickly to Bob in Londonderry. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Hey, very well. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, sir.
I was listening to your talk about the Stephon Diggs. And you know, all those points you make, you almost can answer them two ways. You can say it is a concern, which it could be, or it really isn't. So hopefully, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, he's an older guy. He's coming back from an injury. Why is it every time, no matter what team we are, why do we always get someone who is the last pick? We couldn't seem to get anyone. And if this guy doesn't work out, not just because of his judgment and attitude,
Better
hope his athletic ability is a bit more on the higher end level than what we're seeing in other things, whether we agree or don't agree. And I don't know. And this guy, you got Drake May. I've said it before. I didn't say he's not good, but don't hope. You guys are under a misconception, and I think you're going to see the season. Yes, be probably an improvement from last year, but how about if it isn't or something facsimile? Now what are they going to do? And I think that's still a reality that could happen with this team.
Fair point. Thank you, Bob. It's a new Celtics owner, so that did not go according to plan. But I appreciate the commentary on Stephon Diggs, and that tees up our conversation. We'll also get to Jay in North Carolina. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Can you believe it's June already? It's months are going faster than a Bob Feller fastball. But anyway, I wanted to say that has Vrabel been able to plug all the holes? I mean, that's a Herculean task. The last year's pages were a disaster, and if he can get three games more than the last season, I would be satisfied. But my petrification is in the safety of Drake May, and I'm hoping that the offensive line has been shored up enough to get, because they threw Mac Jones under the bus. He was a lamb to slaughter, and he was a good quarterback. But as I say, if they can improve their record, I'll be satisfied. And guys, would you put me on hold? Because I don't have streaming. I'm in a remote area. I'd like to hear what your comments are. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for the call, Jay. I think Brian decided that was not happening today.
Got busted phone lines here.
All right. Back here on WEEI, you can join the conversation again. Call and text 617-779-7937. And look who's back. It's Jay to sit on hold. Perfect. Okay, so we'll get into the Patriots conversation in just a moment. So the roster moves made by the Red Sox. This started to kind of percolate late yesterday, which is when we found out that Nate Eaton would be recalled by the Red Sox from Worcester. He will wear number 40, if you care. The Red Sox have optioned Nick Sogard back to Worcester, so it's instead of there was some speculation that Rob Refsnyder might have been dealing with an injury. That is not the case, at least for now. So they swap out utility player for utility player. Luis Guerrero recalled from AAA Worcester. We saw that and wondered why. Here's the reason why, and it's kind of a problem. Justin Slayton has been added to the 15-day injured list with right shoulder inflammation. So now we're talking about a bullpen that is down, a high leverage arm in a bullpen that is already seemingly missing at least one high leverage arm. So that puts extra pressure on Greg Weissert. That puts extra pressure on Justin Wilson. I'd say Brendan Bernardino, but he's just going to pitch every single day and he'll be the first guy out of the bullpen no matter what. Put some pressure on Garrett Whitlock as a guy who has gone from seemingly, I don't know about closer in waiting, but certainly high leverage arm in waiting to failed starter to now kind of Swiss Army knife, multi-inning, every couple day kind of reliever. Does that change his role at all? And it also makes the ongoing conversation about the starting rotation even more fascinating when you do end up having to make some of those roster decisions coming up essentially after your next time through the rotation. So those are the roster moves. They've also designated catcher Blake Sable for assignment. That'll open up a 40-man roster spot for all of these moves to happen. And for anybody who's calling for Connor Wong's job as the backup catcher, that's not going to be happening anytime soon if Blake Sable is being designated for assignment. So Narvaez and Wong will be your catchers moving forward. Okay, so let's get to the Stephon Diggs conversation. That has been the conversation going around Patriots OTAs. And honestly, lucky for Drake May, because I know he hasn't had his number one wide receiver, but all of a sudden, all this bluster about May and the interceptions that he threw at the end of last week's OTAs has at least now moved to second place on the metaphorical depth chart of Patriots conversations. Now, I am firmly in the camp. Yes, of course. You wonder what was in the bag. That's what's in the bag. That's the question that everybody's asking: is what was Stephon Diggs doing? What was in his hand? All that kind of stuff. That's not where my main issue is. And that's also not where my main area of hope is in this situation. My main issue is that he's not at OTAs, obviously. The O does not stand for optional, as a matter of fact. It is voluntary. The O stands for Brian.
Organized.
Thank you. Organized team activities with the S. OTAs. Voluntary, but they are voluntary. So I understand the misconception. It's still, well, a misnomer. It's still true, and that he doesn't have to be there. So if he just simply wasn't there and you kept the phone in your pocket we wouldn't be having this conversation. We would simply be talking about a wide receiver who's coming back from a devastating lower body injury, who's not with the team, but is working his way back. And that's okay. But then to pair the video, which has its own issues, to pair that with then the Instagram stories of him working out separately as kind of like a response back across the bow of, don't worry, guys. Don't worry about what I was doing on the boat. Look at me. I'm doing drills. Look at how great I look. Look at how explosive I look. You know where he could be doing those drills?
Foxborough?
Patriots OTAs in Foxborough. By the way, are we going to see a second episode of Forge in Foxborough anytime soon? Or are we just...
I don't know if it's going to include this. I think they're trying to edit some of this out, so it might take a little bit.
You know, I didn't think about that. That's a good point.
you know what? We need an extra week to do this one.
Yeah. Well, let's just cut, you know, let's kind of scribble him out.
Cut out Drake May's interceptions.
Right, yeah.
And then his second shaky day at OTAs. And now they got to cut out this. They're like, oh my gosh.
We got to CGI somebody in. We'll say, you know how they had the pictures of Edelman at camp a couple days ago? They're going to CGI him in a jersey, like taking drills. It's like, oh, look,
catching punts.
Right, just to get in the way of Stephon Diggs when they inevitably cut him. So, again, that's my main issue is you're not here. You have been the folks who are pro signing Stephon Diggs, of which I was one. I thought that despite the injury and the fact that he is past his prime, he's now on his fourth team. I thought that even him at 70-80% was a huge benefit just because of how low the bar is for what this wide receiving group has to do. If you can get a reliable short yardage receiver, a guy who you can move all around the field because you know that he can handle it, and a guy who can kind of show the way for a Pop Douglas or, I mean, basically everybody else in your roster because they're all young, I thought that was a net positive, and I didn't have enough concerns about all the character stuff. Because I thought that was largely financially motivated, and all the issues that happen on fields and in the locker room were later on in contracts. And this, despite it being a multi-year deal, there is an out after 1 year. If it didn't work, all right, wash your hands of it. That's fine. But not having him there and knowing that's the reason why, and then having the sorry, lame excuse of, but look at me doing workouts on my Instagram story, that's not great. So that's the bad. And that brings up the question of, is a roster move going to be on the table? First of all, if he doesn't pass his physical, then you can wash your hands of this with no issue.
I'd probably put it at 15%.
I think that's fair. And there are other reports, and I know, you know, have come from various TV stations and radio stations. So I'm going to kind of put all the information together. And I appreciate all the reporting that's being done on this with various levels of knowledge from different sources, that there are other things besides just the boat video that have kind of rubbed the Patriots the wrong way in the interim. So it seems like there's something that's kind of not bubbling over, but starting to simmer a little bit. So this is a really unique opportunity for Mike Vrabel, in my opinion. As Vrabel comes in as the guy who was trying to right the ship, who was trying to establish a culture on a team that had seemingly next to no culture established under Gerard Mayo. Ricochet shot, sorry. This is a really interesting opportunity, and we're going to discuss that next and continue our conversation on the Patriots offense as all of a sudden, element by element on the Patriots offense has been raising question marks, and it's still, again, OTAs. So we have plenty of the summer to panic and worry and do all of that. 617-779-7937. Where's your concern level with the Patriots? Do you have any? And that's May, that's the receivers, and really just the rest of the offense as Vrabel and company look to put it together. That is all after Brian Frazoco gets us caught up on what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The Red Sox rubber match game today against the Braves is at 1:35. Sox lost 5-0 yesterday, thanks in part to a shaky start from Walker Buehler. And here is Alex Manager speaking post-game on Buehler's performance yesterday.
We talk about his misses, right? The breaking ball to Riley was close to him, hit out of the ballpark. The pitch to Acuña, fastball right down the middle, inconsistent with location.
Garrett Crochet will be on the mound for the Red Sox today with Bryce Elder on the bump for the Braves. We'll have the call of that game for you right here on the Shaw's and Star Market, WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's Perfecting the Art of Fresh, Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks will be on the call. And Dan Ball will stick around. He'll get you started. So don't forget to tune into the Mass Mutual pregame show today at 12:35. The lineups are out for the Red Sox. They are as follows. Jaron Durant in left, batting leadoff, followed by Rafael Devers at DH. You got Willy Abreu batting third. He's in right field. Abraham Toro is in first. Yes, that's correct. Alex Cora did lie to us once again this week. Marcelo Meyer will be at third, followed by Trevor Story at short. Christian Campbell at second. Connor Wong will be behind the plate catching today. And you got Sadon Rafael up batting ninth in center field. The Pacers advanced to the NBA Finals with a 125-108 win over the Knicks in Game 6 last night. They will now take on the Oklahoma City Thunder, with Game 1 set for Thursday night at 8:30. The Stanley Cup Finals are set with the Panthers and Oilers. Game 1 set for Wednesday at 8 o'clock. And finally, the New England Revolution got a win yesterday over Montreal by a score of 3-0. I'm Brian Frisoco. That's what's trending on WEEI and on WEEI.com.
Dan Ball. Dan Ball. On WEEI.
Tommy Curran getting a bit philosophical on WEEI Afternoons. Brian, could you put a rough date on that quote?
That was from March 11th.
March 11th, 2025. So this was correct, before the Stephon Diggs signing, but I would guesstimate that it was probably when the rumors started percolating roughly around then. But the conversation, Diggs aside, at that point, when you're still just getting the beginning of free agency and you're only getting an early peek into what this new era of Patriots football is going to be like, the conversation was still firmly, well, Mike Vrabel has a lot of work to do in terms of reestablishing a culture with the New England Patriots. And that is one of accountability. That is one of hard work. And that is one of we know that there's a leader in the room. We know that there's somebody that's gonna hold us accountable for our actions and push us to our max and things that it seemed like this team was lacking under Gerard Mayo and company. And it's, you know, the blame goes all around. This isn't just one guy that was not building things accordingly. It's a young roster and a young coaching staff and a young head coach and a relatively inexperienced front office, all with the collective mindset of, well, we just need to not be Bill Belichick. More than anything else, what we end up being is going to kind of determine itself down the road. What we need to not be is the Bill Belichick disciplinarian borderline dictatorship that seemed to be the case for most of his run in Foxborough. In the post Brady era, it just seemed to be too much to handle. So they wanted to get out from under all of that last year. And what they failed to do was install their own ways and means and team rules and team sayings and the stuff that you see plastered above the lockers in locker rooms. All those kind of things just didn't hit. So when Mike Vrabel was hired originally, of course, A, you're getting a former Patriot, and that's a Robert Kraft special. B, you're getting a guy that actually does have head coaching experience and was able to win games at the beginning of his tenure in Tennessee. A guy that has a fantastic resume, head coach at the professional level, you know, a coach at the collegiate level, and now this most recent year with the Browns, where it seemed like he kind of took a back seat, but it was more of an observation and learning opportunity, or at least that's the way that he put it. And the last part of that is you're bringing in a guy who, if nothing else, you know exactly what he's about. You know exactly what he's going to bring. He's going to bring intensity to the point where you're like, geez, guy, like, take a breath. But you know that you're going to get that. And so the expectation at that point, when Tom Curran shared that with us, was he is going to build a roster and build a core of players that are going to exemplify that. High character, high quality, high levels of accountability, all these cliches that you hear in sports all the time. It was kind of to the point, Brian, where it was almost 1A and 1B, where as much as you needed talent, you also needed guys with their heads on straight and a coaching staff with the same
thing.
And
it sort of frustrated me a little bit because I always sort of looked back, and whether it was Tommy Curran or other people saying, you know, they're looking for high character guys, you know, that's what Vrabel wants. Well, isn't part of the reason why you hired a guy like Mike Vrabel to sort of tame those guys with maybe lesser character qualities?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
To me, the whole Joe Milton thing, it's like, well, you don't want that guy in the locker room. Well, what's Mike Vrabel here for? Right? Isn't he supposed to be a guy who you talked about has a lot of head coaching experience? And again, even just forget about the resume in terms of wins and losses, but he should be a guy who has a good locker room, can keep guys in check, whether they have big egos or, you know, doing stuff off the field, whatever it may be. To me, having a guy who's had head coaching experience and is that, you know, and I say this with all the love and respect in my heart, that hardo, you know, intense sort of a head coach, you expect him to be able to handle those sort of personalities. So to me, I didn't see the point in trading Joe Milton if that's the reason. I didn't see the issue in bringing in a guy like Stephon Diggs or a George Pickens or somebody like that where maybe they've had character concerns in the past or maybe they've had outbursts. But a guy like Mike Vrabel is supposed to kind of keep that in-house, kind of keep that under wraps, keep that under control. So to me, when they were, you know, spewing off about all that, yeah, I'm not saying you should go seek out guys who have bad character. Of course, I'm not saying that. But Mike Vrabel should be a guy who, if you're going to hire him and you're going to sort of make him the front man of your operation, of your franchise, shouldn't he be able to control that?
Should be, theoretically. And
he's already off to kind of a bad start.
Well, that brings up an interesting point. And first and foremost, good teams have jerks. There are plenty of highly skilled players in the NFL.
I mean, just look at the two teams in the Super Bowl last year, the Chiefs and the Eagles. Each of those franchises, even just over the years, but, you know, even within the last couple of years.
Yeah.
They have some guys who there have been arrests. There have been, should have been arrests.
Tyreek Hill, Rashee Rice, like
Jalen Carter.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of guys on both of those teams that you sort of look at, you're like, wait, he's allowed to still play in the NFL?
But there was never a question when they were brought, like, for example, when they were brought in to the Chiefs system, there was never a question of whether or not Andy Reid and company and the veteran players were going to be able to see past that or work with them or get them on the straight and narrow, the up and up, whatever. Good teams have jerks. Good teams have bad guys. That's just, and the bigger your roster is and as big of a roster is in football, the more of a likelihood there is that you're going to have a couple of bad seeds. But
AJ Brown was complaining when they were up 17-0 in the Super Bowl to a head coach who I think a lot of people think is kind of a boob, right? Like, I don't think very highly of Nick Sirianni. And they're able to win
a
Super Bowl.
By the way, that's how good the roster is.
They're able to win a Super Bowl with guys like Jalen Carter, with guys like AJ Brown, because you put up with some of that.
Right.
If the guy's talented enough.
Right.
And that's what I expected Mike Vrabel. I expected him to be a guy to be able to kind of control those sort of guys who maybe you sort of have question marks about in regards to the talent.
So there is the opportunity that befalls Mike Vrabel and company right now. You have a unique opportunity before you've even called the play in a regular season game as the head coach of the New England Patriots to draw a line in the sand and say, this is what's acceptable and this is not. And Vrabel kind of danced around the question of, have you been in contact with Stephon Diggs after that video went out? The general understanding seemed to be that, or he said, I am in contact every single day with all my players. That's what he said. So if you're to take that at face value, that means that there has been some kind of conversation, and I think it was Giardi on Friday who called it a come to Jesus conversation that they were going to have if they haven't already. So Mike Vrabel has a unique opportunity to either say, our culture does not allow for this, we will not tolerate this, and you're gone, or he can allow it to happen. And there's some more nuance to just allowing it to happen. This can be a one strike, and if you reach two strikes, you're out kind of situation. Either way, if the Vrabel regime is going to be successful in doing those two things, which is building a culture, which is reestablishing whatever the new Patriot way is going to be, because that kind of was more just the Belichick way. But whatever the new brand of Patriots football is going to be, if he's going to be the one that successfully establishes that, which is what I was told all offseason was going to be the thing that he did. He's a hardo, like Brian said. He's a hard ass. He's going to ask the most out of his guys. it's going to be tough, but you're going to reap the benefits of the way that he goes 11 out of 10 in everything he does. If that's going to work, you have to handle this perfectly. And this is just my personal opinion. I'm not saying you cut him yet. He needs to be on notice. If I don't see him, so the Patriots are back on the field tomorrow, second, third, and fifth. Final days of OTAs, and then it's mandatory minicamp the following week. I really need to see Steph Diggs at least in the facility tomorrow or at some point this week. I understand it's voluntary. I understand he doesn't have to be there. But in this situation, for both parties, he kind of has to be there. This is the most mandatory voluntary camp in Stephon Diggs' career, if that makes any sense at all. I need to see him there. I need to see him a part of this. I need to see that this was a one-off. And I don't really care what was happening on the boat. I need to see that you're committed. You want to get involved in extracurriculars, put the phone away so we don't know, and I can't stop you. Nobody can stop you. But when it's time to go to work and you're joining a team that has a million and one questions about whether or not they can compete this year, you have people saying they're going to win 6 games. You have people saying they're going to win 13 games. Nobody has a good feel on what this team is going to be. Stephon Diggs, injury aside, was supposed to be at least one of the known quantities on this roster. Even if you get him at 80% for 3/4 of the games, you should know what you're going to get because he's a veteran, because he's been there before, because there's an actual resume and a track record. And if he's not locked in, and if he already has one foot out into retirement and whatever he wants to do after being an influencer, being, you know, famous via social media, making money that way, having a podcast, whatever he's going to do. If we're already there, then there's no use for you in my football club.
Do you think part of the reason why he feels like he's entitled to do some of this stuff or maybe didn't care about a video like that getting leaked out is because he looked at the rest of the receiving room and he's like, they're not going to cut me for any of these bombs? Like, Patriots don't have a ton of leverage in the situation. Yes, Mike Vrabel could cut him to try to make a point to the rest of the team, but then you sort of look at the rest of your receiving room, you're like, hey, you know, Drake May, you know, we just signed Stephon Diggs for you. I know, you know, we got you a number one receiver, but we actually cut him, and now you're going to be throwing to Mac Hollins and Jalen Polk and Javon Baker again.
True.
So I think Diggs, it's easy for him, and I'm not saying he's doing this, but I think it's easy for him to look at it and say, well, I can kind of get away with a lot of stuff because they don't really have any other options.
No, I think that's another in the many wrinkles of this entire situation is he probably looks at it and goes, they need me, at least financially, more than I need them right now. And there's probably also a very good chance that another team, if he shook loose, would at least give him a look in training camp. And then if he is progressing at the level that we've been told that he's progressing, maybe he catches on and he plays a smaller role on a team that has a better chance to be competitive. So that is a big part of that. So that's why I'm of the mind that you're not just going scorched earth in this situation and you're not calling him into the principal's office and cutting him tomorrow. But I certainly think that two things at minimum should come from this. One, you should have another conversation with Stephon Diggs about what your mutual interests are in this, what your expectations of the player are, and what the player wants to get from all of this. Try to get the answer as clearly as possible as to whether or not you're in. And if not, hey, let's wash our hands of this. Hey, didn't work out. You're not in. We're not in. So that's one. And two, let this be a lesson for the guys on your roster of you don't necessarily have to walk on eggshells around me. But you do need to be accountable and available and not be making excuses, or it's going to be a pretty quick and ugly divorce. So I'm not making a move tomorrow. I'm not doing anything tomorrow because there's a lot of skill that you like with this guy. You want to give him a chance to build something with Drake May. But you need there to be an understanding that we're not going to tolerate this again. And if it continues to be an issue, then we end up having to make a tough decision. That's where I would land on it. So I think it's a unique opportunity. And so it also begs a very confusing question on this roster. So far during OTAs, we've heard that the quarterback is inaccurate and uneven in his performance, except for that one where the reporters weren't there, where apparently he was turnover free.
Conveniently enough.
Yeah. So reporters were there. He turned the ball over four times. Reporters weren't there. He was turnover free. Reporters were there again. Uneven performance. completed, I think I read, with a fumbled snap at the end.
It's like 9 of 17 or something.
Yes, that was the exact number. Thank you. So anytime that there are objective eyes on Drake May, he has not been very good in these OTAs. You're installing the offense, what is believed to be a very complex offense with new language, to a second-year quarterback and a bunch of young receivers and a bunch of kind of depth pieces. So it's never going to be that easy. And it was said by Mike Vrabel, and this could have just been an excuse to take some of the pressure off of Drake. It was a lot of third and 10 with no perceived running game situations where it's just, hey, the passing game needs to make a play. So you're not necessarily in game situation. And apparently you also don't have what is supposed to be your most secure target in Stephon Diggs anywhere around the offense, which is its own issue. So the quarterback has been inaccurate. The offensive line has had its warts. Will Campbell's arms are still short. I don't know if you heard that. And then the wide receiving room is missing Stephon Diggs, and the players that you do have a lot of question marks. But that's okay, because Hunter Henry is still his favorite target. So all is well, right? Puts a lot of pressure on the running game. I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on the role that Travion Henderson plays, Ramondre Stevenson, how he's deployed. You now do have a little bit of depth in that room to where maybe you can use Ramondre a bit more sparingly. Antonio Gibson's still in the mix. Leighton Larrison apparently is when he got the chance to step up with the big boys when Henderson wasn't there a couple of weeks ago, apparently he's looked really good. So if nothing else, you hopefully have a run game that can balance out your passing offense a little bit. Brian, give me an out of 10, your confidence in the Patriots offense as a collective right now.
Offense as a whole?
Yeah. Just right now, just from what we know right now.
Five?
All right.
5.5?
I'm okay with that. So that's obviously the issues that we've heard, but that's also potential early on in the summer.
I think
Josh
they've
McDaniels.
Just upgraded in just about every area.
Okay.
As opposed to last year. I mean, last year, you know, I probably felt a 2 or a 3. But, you know, yeah. I feel like you've improved in the coaching.
Yep.
You've improved in the offensive line. In theory, you've improved your receivers.
Right.
If you want to throw in running back, I'm not a huge running back guy, but sure, throw in Henderson. He, you know, with his speed, he can be a weapon. And, you know, I think Drake May, you know, assuming he is what a lot of people think he's going to be, should be better in year two, right? You sort of make that jump from year one to year two. Most quarterbacks do if they're going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. So I think just sort of by default, they should be a little bit better.
Yeah.
And maybe just because it's looked so bad the last few years, you know, your expectations have been so low and you just sort of see these minor improvements and maybe sort of inflate them a little bit in your own head, right? Because you haven't seen, you know, guys on the offensive line whose names you actually know.
Right.
Right. You haven't seen a notable wide receiver. And I know there's question marks with Diggs in terms of off field and just when he's going to actually play, but you know the name Stephon Diggs. You have an offensive coordinator who you feel a lot better about than you did certainly last year. And I know Bill O'Brien sort of came in, and I think people had some high expectations, but the quarterback still sucked.
Right.
So you just sort of feel like, you know, just comparing it from this year and last year, it's hard not to feel a little bit better. But if you're just going by just the reports from what you've got, I mean, it hasn't looked good. And you mentioned how, you know, a lot of third and 10 situations, right? Passing downs, you know, obvious passing down situations.
Right.
Well, Carlton Davis hasn't been here either. He was one of your big free agent signings, and the defense is still killing you. Now, I'm not saying he's the only good player on the defense, but for everyone who wants to say, well, Diggs wasn't there. Well, it's obviously third and 10. Well, they're missing their second best corner, and the defense is still kicking their ass.
Good point. Good points across the board. Yeah, I think a 5 is okay. I think a 5 is fine. Well, that's the definition of mediocrity.
Well, so what's yours?
I'm a little bit lower. I think I'm more in
7!
Like the 4. No, I think I'm in more of a 4 because every addition that you supposedly made, save from the running back position, because we have there's there isn't really a great way to evaluate that, has had holes poked in it to this point. So
don't you feel better about the right side of the line, though? You got Moses, you got Onwenu.
I feel better on paper about every part of the offense, but I can't look at the reporting and not be a little concerned. And this is supposed to be safe for Diggs, the best version of the offense that you're going to get. You don't have any injuries yet. Nobody's gone yet.
That's a good point. So
everybody's healthy, save for whatever the hell Diggs was doing. And this is the kind of conversation we're having. And it's all if the offensive line was bad and Diggs wasn't there, and you're still early in the install, but Drake May was fine, I'd feel better. If all of this was happening, Drake May was inaccurate, but you had a little bit of competition to push him, I don't want to relitigate the Joe Milton thing. And I'm not saying that he's an NFL starter. I'm not saying he's an NFL quarterback. He was playing second and third stringers against the Bills. I get it. But the reporting from Mike Reese and company was that you cleared the runway for Drake by trading Joe, because apparently Joe Milton was some impediment in the runway of his takeoff as an NFL quarterback. And now I'm not sure if you said hit the runway with a throw, he could do it. So what was the point of taking any kind of sense of competition out to push the guy? Healthy competition. Not this toxic, like trying to go behind your back to get the I don't know what the perception was of what a quarterback competition would be this year. But if Drake May couldn't handle the threat of a potential quarterback competition, another rookie that was pushing him for reps, then that makes me extremely concerned for where this is going. 617-779-7937. It's only June, and these are the conversations that we're having. So as the summer goes along, God knows where we're going on the state of the New England Patriots. As I am a hockey guy, Brian's a hockey guy as well. I have to examine the question, why in the hell don't the Bruins have a head coach? We'll do that next.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
All I can tell you is that as we record this late Tuesday night / Wednesday morning, I'm under the impression Sturm is supposed to still visit Boston. Now, whether that's to do another interview or be given the job, I can't say that as we record it. But he's very much in it.
That was Elliot Friedman of the 32 Thoughts podcast, kind of dancing around the idea that Marco Sturm may be named the head coach of the Boston Bruins. Back here on WEEI, Red Sox baseball coming up 12:35, the pregame, 1:35, the first pitch. So we are now 7 weeks into the Bruins search for a head coach. I shouldn't be firing Alex Cora in my head already. 7 weeks into the Bees coaching search. And what we know are a couple of names. Marco Sturm has been a name that has been bandied about probably more than any other, at least in say, the last 2 weeks. Sturm has spent the last three seasons as the head coach of the Ontario Reign, which is the AHL affiliate of the Los Angeles Kings, and he's been coaching in the Kings organization since 2018. I kind of found this funny. I went onto his Elite Prospects page last night while I was prepping. An evaluator said of him after his career, Sturm was a two-way winger with tremendous speed and skating ability. He had terrific hockey smarts and would play in any situation. A good puck handler, he could also shoot the puck. So, Marco Sturm, hockey smarts, any situation, which is a good thing for a coach. Does not have NHL head coaching experience, but again, 3 years coaching with the Ontario Reign. The Kings have been a relatively successful Western Conference program, at least consistently making the playoffs. They've had some pretty good players come up through their system in recent years. So there's a resume there. And of course, there is the Bruins alumni connection, which seems to be a thing that you kind of have on your resume if Cam Neely and company are going to trust you in some capacity. Well, I mean, at least if you're going to join this iteration of the front office. So Sturm is on the table. Jay Woodcroft coached in the league in some capacity since 2005, comes from a good hockey family, coaching at the professional and collegiate level. Joined the Oilers organization as an assistant in 2015, a few years as the head coach of their AHL affiliate. Was named interim head coach in February of 2022. led them to the Western Conference Finals, named their full-time head coach. They lost to Colorado that year in the Western Conference Finals, who then went on to win the Stanley Cup, so do with that what you will. Only one full season as the Oilers head coach, 50-23-9, lost in the second round. They started the season 3-9-1 in 2023, and he was then fired. Chris Knobloch took over, former coach of the Hartford Wolfpack, and he's been there ever since. So other than one stop as an assistant coach with the Canadian national team, Woodcroft has been out and looking for his next job, his second job. And he does, and I feel like this is a critical thing to say, have NHL head coaching experience in a hockey-crazed market. So Jay Woodcroft is on the table.
I asked you this the other day before our show. I think it was maybe Thursday.
Yeah.
Why Edmonton fired him? Right, you just read the resume. Went to the Western Conference Finals. Following year, went to the second round, you said?
Second round, yeah. Lost to Vegas.
Then had a slow start around November, maybe early December, and gets canned?
Yeah.
Like, what's that about?
It's a great question. I mean, did they win the Stanley Cup? No. Have they won the Stanley Cup since? No. Have they been close to the Stanley Cup since then? Yes, but like it's not like they hired Chris Knobloch and then got over the hump.
It just felt like a very short leash to give a guy.
I agree.
Mean, Edmonton sucked for a while.
I completely agree.
And I don't know, you get them to Western Conference Finals. You said they play that Avalanche team, who was loaded,
right,
by the way.
Right.
Then lose in the second round. And then you get one slow start and you're out. Like, to me, and again, I really don't know. This is an actual genuine question. Like, what happened there? Why are you getting fired that early?
It's a great question, and I honestly wish I knew the answer. And you know what happened, by the way, in that 2022-23 season when they lost in the second round to Vegas? You know what Vegas then did?
They won the Stanley Cup.
They won the Stanley Cup. So
he's lost to two Stanley Cup winners.
His two, right. As interim head coach, he lost to Colorado in the Western Conference Finals, who then won the Cup. In 2022-23, his Oilers lost to the Vegas Golden Knights, who then beat the Dallas Stars 4-2 and the Florida Panthers 4-1 and won the Stanley Cup, all while having suspect goaltending, I might add. But 3-9-1, got the hook. And look, it ended up working out for Edmonton, but it did feel very quick given what the resume was. So I am honestly surprised that Jay Woodcroft has not gotten a job in hockey since that point, given that resume. But he is on the table, as is Mitch Love, who is the assistant coach of the Washington Capitals under Spencer Carberry. They've had an incredible turnaround. They've done a really nice job with their young players, which I think is important to talk about the fact that they had a group that had a couple of veterans, but were really trying to kind of rebuild this thing on the fly with some younger draft picks and some AHL guys. He was the head coach of Calgary's AHL affiliate for 2 years, then went over, joined Carberry's staff in Washington, and they've done a tremendous job with their roster. So he's on the table. You've also heard Misha Donskov, who has gotten less attention of late. He spent 2 years as the assistant coach of the Dallas Stars under Pete DeBoer, 7 years with the Vegas Golden Knights, first as the director of hockey operations, and then as an assistant coach 2019 to 2023. He's got an unbelievable resume in terms of what he's won. Four Nations champion, Stanley Cup champion in 22-23 with Vegas, a couple Spangler Cups, a couple U18, U20 gold medals, world champion gold medal, World Cup gold medal as well. He's been all around at the national and professional level. He has been mentioned less often recently, but you haven't hired anybody. There were rumors that the Bruins were waiting until certain teams were out of the playoffs to complete their interviews. Dallas has now been eliminated from playoff contention. So I wonder if they're also giving Donskov a look. All that to say, of those names, first and foremost, you are no longer a preferred destination. You are right now fighting for the scraps in this coaching search. And regardless of who you hire, where the roster is going right now and the level of trust that people have in Don Sweeney and Cam Neely, I don't know if your next coach is going to be here all that long, because I don't know if your next coach is the one that gets you to the playoffs and wins you a cup. It's almost the hire before the hire, as I perceive it. So you did not get Mike Sullivan. You did not get Rick Tocchet. And I know he got a lot of money, so there were some rumors that maybe they didn't want to pay the $5 million and change that he ended up getting. But you didn't get the cream of the crop. David Carl didn't want to leave Denver and come to you, which I guess I can't really blame him for. He didn't go anywhere. So we'll see what happens, and we'll see what happens next year when he once again is probably right at the top. We do have to take a break. Brian, of the names that I just listed, and maybe there's another that I didn't get to because I'm a huge Mark Savard fan, but I'm also extremely biased. Any of those kind of hit you? Any tickle your fancy? Any of those the one you want to see?
So I'm not going to lie. I didn't know much about Woodroffe before this whole coaching search.
Yep.
His resume to me just is the best.
Yes.
For our sake, would I like a Peter Laviolette? Of course.
Okay.
Just because that's a name. Sturm to me, I'm tired of the Bruins retreads. Boston connection ties. It feels like whether they're drafting a guy or signing a guy or hiring a guy,
yeah,
there's always a BU connection, a BC connection. He played for the Bruins, or he grew up in Charlotte. Like, I just want something new, something a little different. Stray away from what's comfortable, because clearly that hasn't been working for you over the last few years. I'd like something new and different. Woodroffe is exciting. I think he seemed like he turned around that Edmonton team, and it feels like he was just a bad month away from still being their head coach right now. And again, I would like to know more about why that happened, but to me he's probably the most exciting out of those three that you mentioned.
That's kind of been my, as we've sorted through this, that's kind of where I've landed as well. I think a guy with an actual resume that has coached games before, that can kind of bridge the gap. He had some young players, had some veteran players, has been in a big hockey market, could probably navigate that. So of those, I would prefer Jay Woodcroft, but to your point about the Bruins ties and where this front office sits, it's going to be Marco Sturm. It's just a matter of time.
Oh, I'm waiting to be disappointed.
Yeah, it's going to be, and I think he could do a fine job, but first-time head coach, Bruins ties with a shaky front office and a bad roster, I can't get excited about that. Not that I'm going to be over the moon when they hire Jay Woodcroft if they did, but none of this really gets my blood pumping. And all of it's secondary, because you have roster issues, and that's really what you need to fix. And the coach is almost a non-important part of this equation if you don't fix the roster. Okay, we are clicking towards the 12 o'clock hour. We have Red Sox baseball with pregame coverage at 12:35. We'll get back into the Red Sox to lead you into Red Sox coverage, and we will do that next.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com.
and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.